Good afternoon, everyone. Thank everybody for coming. There's a growing interest in producing more energy from renewable energy sources due to the increasing energy demands, increasing interest in increasing our national energy independence, and also reducing carbon emissions. However, there is multiple options for producing renewable energy sources, but there's one option that is a good option for the state of Kentucky is producing renewable energy crops such as switchgrass, which is a native warm season grass of the tallgrass prairie. And this can be managed for biomass that's harvested and burned for electricity and can also be processed for cellulosic ethanol. The lands, viable agricultural land, natural ecosystems, and woodlands should be avoided when producing biomass due to consequences with food production, loss of habitat, and also net carbon gains from harvesting wood. The best options for land for biomass production is highly erodible lands, drained wetlands that are currently in row crop production, and also abandoned marginal lands. Dr. DeBolt et al. In 2009 put out a paper that stated that 21% of Kentucky's current land area is in abandoned agricultural lands and mine lands, which makes the state of Kentucky a good option for the renewable energy crops. If all of this land was put into C4 grass production and harvested and co-fired with coal and electricity in a coal-burning power plant for electricity, about 17% of the current energy consumption of the state of Kentucky could be produced using this renewable energy source. What I'm interested in is better understanding the wildlife habitat quality of these switchgrass stands managed for biomass production, especially if we're potentially going to be establishing thousands of acres of switchgrass in the future. There are many positive characteristics of switchgrass stands for habitat, such as dense canopy cover, which allows good protection from predators, and also abundant food sources with both seed and forage availability, among others. However, there's three main characteristics that possibly limit the habitat quality of these stands. One, they are monocultures. They're also managed for maximizing yield, so they're usually dense stands. The stands that I studied were at 10 pounds of pure live seed per acre. And also they do endure an annual harvest, which our stands were harvested in the late fall. For my project, I studied small mammals in the switchgrass stands compared to other land uses. And the reason I chose small mammals was because they do provide many important ecosystem services that are important to ecosystem health. But the main reason that I chose small mammals in my study was because of their life characteristics. The switchgrass stands that were involved in my project were only 5 acres in area. And small mammals have small home ranges and short dispersal distances, about approximately 2.5 acres for some species. So there's a higher probability that the animals that I captured in these stands are actually utilizing those resources as almost 100% of their area instead of using multiple land uses to access the resources that they need. Also, some research uses small mammals as ecological indicators of habitat quality. Therefore, if we have an abundant and diverse small mammal population in these types of stands, then they could be potentially good habitat quality for other wildlife species on a larger scale. So the primary objective of my research project was investigating the small mammal populations in switchgrass stands managed for biomass production compared to other common land uses to assess the relative habitat quality of the switchgrass stands. I studied switchgrass stands, both 2- and 3-year-old stands, cool season grass legume hay fields, which were all perennial stands that were greater than 5 years old, and they were harvested 3 times during 2009, which is when my project took place. And I also studied cornfields, both no-till and conventionally tilled established stands, and they were all managed for grain production. I had 4 sites total in Kentucky, and at each site it had 1 field of each of the 3 habitats. I trapped 4 different times in 2009, first in the spring, which is before the first hay harvest of the 4 sites, in the summer, fall, and also in the winter, which is after the corn and switchgrass was harvested. At each trapping session, I trapped for 3 consecutive nights, and I used birdseed for baiting, and the traps were open during the night. They were closed during the day, mainly due to the summer heat. I established a 50-meter by 50-meter trap grid in each habitat, and I used a Sherman live trap, which you can see a picture of, and I placed one every 10 meters in the grid. So there was 36 traps in each habitat when I trapped. The small mammal measurements that I collected were species, weight, sex, age, and trap location for each capture. And I also recorded the vegetative measurements of each habitat during each trapping session. I had 5 different vegetative measurements, but the one I will discuss in this discussion will be the robot pole measurements, which basically estimates the amount of vegetative density in these types of habitats during the times of year. The data that I used to compare the habitats was small mammal relative abundance, which was calculated using a capture per unit effort index, which is basically the number of captures I had per divided by my effort, which was 100 trap nights. And the trap night unit is simply one trap open for a one night period. I also calculated the species richness of each habitat, which is simply the number of species I captured in that habitat. So as my results, I captured 6 small mammal species in total. I captured 3 mice species, which are shown here, 2 paramiscus, which are white-footed mice and prairie deer mice, and I also captured house mice, which are your typical ones that you don't really want to see in your houses. I also captured voles, both meadow voles and prairie voles, and I captured northern short-tailed shrews. I combined the 2 meadow voles and prairie voles into one category for analysis due to difficulty in telling all the captures apart during the beginning of my study. But overall, all of my sites and all of my trapping sessions, I captured all 5 categories of species in the switchgrass and hayfield, but I only caught 3 species in the 3 mice species in the cornfield. I did not catch voles or shrews in the cornfields. However, there was great variability across the 4 sites, so in order to analyze this data, I analyzed the average, so I calculated the mean species richness of the 3 habitats, and it wasn't significant in a p-value of 0.05, but it was at 0.1. And switchgrass was significantly higher species richness than hay, but it was not significantly different than corn. However, if you look at the number of genres I captured in each habitat, I captured twice the amount of genres in the switchgrass habitat compared to the corn habitat. And each of the genres of small mammals require different types of habitat preferences, which basically means that we have a higher number of niches in the switchgrass habitat compared to the corn habitat, which is important. So overall, I had the most, my capture per unit effort index was the highest in switchgrass, followed by corn and hay, but I had a significant habitat by trapping session interaction, which simply means in order to compare the habitats, I have to do it within each trapping session, which is shown here. So on the y-axis, we have my capture per unit effort index, and on the x-axis, we have the 4 different trapping sessions. And corn is in yellow, hay is in blue, and switchgrass is in green. So in the spring, this is again when corn was just planted, switchgrass is just beginning to produce above ground biomass, and hay is about waist high and producing seed. There is no significant difference in small mammal relative abundance. In the summer, when corn's beginning to produce in the ear, still green, and the switchgrass is just beginning to produce seeds, and the hay has already been cut at least once or twice, the corn and switchgrass habitats had a higher relative abundance than hay fields. And in the fall, when switchgrass was fully mature and most of the seed had already shattered, and the corn fields were drying down, and the hay fields have all been cut 3 times, switchgrass had a higher relative abundance than corn and hay fields. And in the winter, which was after harvest of the switchgrass and the corn fields, there was again no significant difference between these 3 habitats. So if you look across time, the hay fields had a relatively low abundance across my entire study. Corn had a relatively high small mammal abundance during the summer, which is a time when it had both vegetative cover and seed availability. And then switchgrass was the highest in the fall, which was when it had also seed availability and high vegetative cover. And if you look at the winter, after the harvest, it does seem like we are having a harvest effect from the late fall harvest. There was a pretty big difference between my corn tillage systems. So of the 4 sites, I had 2 no-till and 2 conventionally tilled established stands. And the no-till is in orange and the conventionally tilled is in yellow. and the no-till corn had higher small amount relative abundance for summer, fall, and winter, but there's no significant difference in the spring. And again, the same pattern was with the switchgrass stand. I had two-year-old stands and 2 3-year-old stands. And the 3-year-old stands had a higher small mammal relative abundance during the spring, summer, and winter. They were not significantly different in the fall. And this is most likely due to the amount of above ground biomass. Switchgrass stands usually take about 3 years to really develop above ground biomass. It takes, the first 2 years are usually establishment periods where they're developing or putting a lot of their resources down into the root system. And then the third year, we usually say, is when it really starts producing more above ground biomass. On that note, I did have a significant relationship between vegetative density and my captures per unit effort indices, but I had a significant outlier. My student residual was 3.8, which was a switchgrass stand after harvest on one of my sites. So when that's removed, I still have a significant relationship, but my coefficient of determination is about 0.5, and this indicates that there's, in addition to vegetative density having an impact on these small mammal abundances, it is a natural system, and there's multiple other variables that are probably impacting and driving these different population effects. So in summary, the switchgrass habitat had a more abundant small mammal population in the fall session compared to the hay and corn fields. And the small mammal abundance in the switchgrass was comparable to corn in the summer, But this was mainly driven by the high abundance in the no-till stands, and there's a lower abundance in the conventional stands. So the comparableness was really between the no-till established corn and the switchgrass habitats. However, there was a higher species richness in the switchgrass stands than the hay fields, and they had twice the number of species genres present in the switchgrass compared to the corn habitats. So therefore, even though at different parts of the year, the relative abundance of all small mammals were comparable between the three habitats, we still had a higher, more diverse, more diversity of small mammal species groups in the switchgrass stands compared to the two other habitats. Again, the 3-year-old stands had a higher small mammal abundance compared to the 2-year-old stands, which is most likely due to the significant relationships between vegetative density and my small mammal populations. And also, it does seem like we are having a late fall harvest effect where in the switchgrass in the cornfield, and also this could be an indicator of why we had a low relative abundance in the hay fields throughout this study due to the 3 harvests. So further research needs to be conducted over multiple seasons and sites to understand the driving mechanisms of the small mammal populations. And also there's multiple things that could be done to look at improving the habitat quality, such as alternate harvesting methods, maybe possibly leaving some of the stand over winter and harvesting in the spring, increasing heterogeneity, and also possibly lowering the planting density. Acknowledge my advising committee, the producers that allowed me to access their fields, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and others that helped me on my project. And I'll answer any questions that you have.
Any questions?
Yes.
Back.
One of the suggestions, of course, for biomass production is to maintain prairie diversity, maintaining that diversity and so forth. But one of the worries is that by removing vegetation at some time during the years, you look at switchgrass in the late fall, which also suggests a possibility of harvesting like early spring and early winter. Is that eventually it'll affect wildlife population? What is your feeling on that?
So the 6 species that I captured in the switchgrass stands and overall my project are considered generalist species, and I didn't have a diverse restored tallgrass prairie that wasn't harvested in this project. But if you look at the literature, in general, they usually have a higher species richness in these diverse restored stands that aren't harvested compared to what I found. So I think there's definitely a difference between those types of systems, and I think there's definitely improvement with, or could be potential improvement with, having a refuge area. They really don't know yet how large the area will need to be able to basically harbor small mammals over the winter to not have a large effect from a late fall harvest. So there is a lot of work. According to what I found, it does seem like a complete late fall harvest is negatively affecting the population. But there's definitely more work that needs to be done to see if you can, what size of refuge area that needs to be left for winter cover to negatively or reduce the impact.
I assume you use the trap and release, but mm-hmm. how do you account for animals that may have been trapped multiple times?
So the majority of small mammal studies are done with a marker capture study where you capture a small mammal and then you mark them with an ear tag or with an individual number or toe clipping or somehow individually mark individuals. I did not do that. So in order to account for that, the capture per unit effort index is used basically to standardize. So one of my assumptions is that my recapturing of the same individuals is equal across the habitats, and then by producing the index values, it standardizes that captured effort.
Any other questions? I have one.
Yes.
Your differences between corn and switchgrass, how would natural migration patterns that the mice might have from food sources and cover as winter comes,
I wasn't able to specifically look at the driving mechanisms with my project, but I didn't include this, but I think that migration is impacting the small mammals. Most of my habits were relatively close, so depending on species, specifically house mice, they had a high relative abundance in the corn during the summer and a lower relative abundance higher relative abundance in the switchgrass in the fall. So that might be reflecting the migration patterns of hopping one habitat when it's good to another habitat when it's good. So I think that it's definitely having an influence on the small mammal populations. I just am not sure how large.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That's the last.